Welcome back to Solving Puzzles, Part 2. This series on the Yiwa blog, presented by your host, Craig Wynn, is about what Dode, who is the prophet speaking here for Yiwa, had to say about being circumspect, about using our noggins to come to understand what we have heard God say. He will speak of Azan being the concept of hearing and responding, such that we perceive what God is saying and make reasonable deductions from the testimony he has provided. And ultimately, in the second statement of this Mizmor, this is the 78th, we're going to hear Dode speak of solving puzzles. And you might think, oh, come on, you know, God should be above God to speak of solving puzzles. Just tell us what we need to know, and let's move on from there. No. God likes it when we solve the puzzle. And it's his preferred way of communicating, since when he spoke directly to his people, especially during the Exodus, their response was, go away and shut up. We don't ever want to hear from you or see you again. So at that point, he began to speak through his chosen implements. The first of those was Moshe. And with Moshe, he conveyed the Torah. But even as he conveyed the Torah, and he spoke of the covenant, that the first long narrative was the presentation of his discussions with Abraham and Sarah, leading to Yitzhak and Jacob. God presents the story, where he found them, where he led them, what he had to say and share with them, what their response was. But he doesn't come out and say, oh, by the way, what I've just shared with you comprises five conditions. Were there five things that you really need to understand and act upon if you want to be part of this? And if you do, I've got five benefits for you. Now, they're all there. They're readily deduced from the text, and yet they have been available for us to read for 3,400 years. And yet I'm the first person to say, well, if you want to deduce this all to something that solves the puzzle of what the covenant represents, how do you engage in it, what God is expecting in return, what do each of these things mean, the first person who has presented that in all 3,400 years that have transpired since it was conveyed to us through the Torah. Solving the puzzle, I think, is the single most important part now of God's communication, because he doesn't want a cookie cutter kind of thing. He doesn't want somebody saying, oh, okay, I've got these things that I have to do. If I do these things, then we're all copacetic and I get to be part of eternity. And then just go on and live their life, never have thought about it, never have considered the implications of all of this. And so that's the last thing that God wants. He wants us to have applied ourselves and to think it through. And as a barrier to entry is understanding. Because until we understand, we can't trust and rely. And that happens to be the second condition of the covenant. As a result of that, so much of what God conveyed is conveyed in puzzle pieces to put together. For example, very few people have come to the realization that the five benefits of the covenant are all provided through the first three Moed Mikre that father and son fulfilled, Pesach, Matzah, and Mukkotim. And they don't understand what each of those three Mikre actually represents in our lives, because they don't understand that they're delivering the benefits of the covenant. This was a puzzle to pick together. And puzzle, particularly if you're looking at a jigsaw puzzle, these are marvelous things. This ability to look at the pieces and organize them so they all fit together correctly, and they paint this beautiful picture. It is a marvelous way to communicate. In fact, in this text, we're going to hear Yahweh speak of a mashal. And that's ultimately the purpose of solving the puzzle, because a mashal is a word picture. So it's just delightful. So we solve the puzzle to see the word picture that God is using to communicate with us. So because his children said they didn't want to hear from him or see him again, during the time of the Exodus, as the Torah itself was being revealed, much of what God has shared since that time, including the Torah itself, is a word picture to be pieced together correctly so that it can be understood. And that is the purpose of these programs. I'm delighted to be able to come into your home, to be part of your life, and to share with you how God's word pictures have all been conveyed to reveal what Yahweh is really like, what the covenant is actually comprised of, and how we go about participating in it and what we should expect in return. And even how all of these events have played out in human history and will continue to transpire over the next 8.5 years until Yahweh returns to complete his story with his people. So it's fun for me to get into this topic as we continue to pursue the others that we're doing concurrently on the Yahweh blog, which is our continuation of the story of In the Garden, and also our continuation and conclusion of Dode's song. So to pick up where we left off, we jumped into the first statement of the 78th Mizmor, which is a song. It was written by Dode, Yahweh's beloved son and his our Messiah, our Zeruah, Savior as well, the man that served as the Pesach Gael in his second of his third lives. And speaking for his father, he wrote, "This is a call to be circumspect, to understand, and to prosper." These are lyrics to a song which encourages comprehension. Pay attention and consider the insights. It is from Sakal and Ma to ponder the implications of thoughtful contemplation. This means a lot to me. And the reason this means a lot to me is very early on in this process, I came to realize that God has no interest in faith. And faith has been heretofore one of the two or three primary ways that the religious have been taught to identify with God. God has no interest in it. He wants you to know, not believe. He wants you to trust as opposed to having faith. And he provides more than enough information for you to be able to prove his existence and to demonstrate that he inspired these words so that you can come to know him and trust and rely upon him. And the only way to do that is to be circumspect, to move from being ignorant to knowing, and then from irrational to total reason comprehension. And so this is how we make contact with God. And I think in the preamble to Introduction to God, one of the first books that I wrote, and I think it's also in the preamble to the first volume of Yada Yawa, I said, I want you to leave your faith behind. We're going on a journey through the mind. And words are going to be the vehicles that lead us from this world to the next. This is what Dode is saying. So this call to be circumspect and to understand is for the purpose of valuing these treasures. So there's going to be treasures that are revealed. These are the most valuable commodities in the universe. The treasure that Yahweh is offering us, eternal life, being perfected, being adopted into his family, being enriched and empowered, being emancipated and enlightened, being enabled. These are the very treasures of the covenant. And these are the things that God is offering us through his son. So this is a call to comprehend and prosper for the purpose of being open to the storehouse of the most valuable commodities in the universe. He continues, my people. Now, whether this is God speaking through Dode or Dode speaking to God and to his extended family, my people are Israelites. Now, that doesn't mean that this doesn't pertain to non-Israelites. You know, my title is a Nakar, sometimes presented as Nakri. It's an observant foreigner. Their prophecies are filled with testimony that will bring Yahweh's people home that is being delivered by the man from Edom. Most of the titles that are ascribed to the job that I am doing on your behalf are those that are pertinent and actually shared in the context of being a goy. So, Yahweh will reach out to goy. In fact, all the initial characters in Yah's story are goyim. Adam and Chawa, clearly goyim. Noach and his family, goyim. Abraham and Sarah, well, they were from Babylon. You can't get any more goyim than that. And Yishak, goy. Jacob, he's a goy. It is his children through Rachel and Leah that become the first Israelites. So God absolutely has an interest in communicating with and even through observant foreigners, as he's doing in this particular case. However, the message is delivered to Yisrael, through whom the covenant is offered. And so for us as Ger, foreigners, for us to benefit from what Dode is saying, we have to become part of Yisrael. We have to view ourselves attitudinally as being part of his family. And this is essential, because God says that he is going to award phenomenal benefits, including this enormous inheritance to Dode's offspring as the man who became the catalyst through whom the covenant was conceived. So this reads, my family, Am Ani. And every Jew in the world, if they don't know, they should know that Am Yisrael would be the people of Yisrael or the family of Yisrael. I want you to choose to listen and respond. The reason I've shared this in that way, where I'm expressing Dode's desire and also the fact that this is being prescribed to us under the auspices of free will, where he wants us to make the choice to listen and respond, is because the verb, azan, was scribed both in the imperative, which is second person volition, that speaks of us, and also in the cohortative, which speaks of first person volition, which would be Dode. And it was also shaded, if you will, by the hifl stem, which tells us that Dode recognizes that if we listen to what he has to say in this regard, that we will become his understudy, that we will become very much like him, and he is making that possible with these words. So the Hebrew grammar speaks volume in this particular case. So my people, you should choose to listen and respond to my Torah teaching. Torah means teaching and guidance, direction and instructions. It's from the verb yara, and yara speaks of a source from which teaching and guidance flow. Now, I shared this in the last program. For Dode to call it my Torah, when in fact Yahweh revealed his Torah through Moshe, means that the Son of God is about his Father's business. That anything that is God's, he knows as the firstborn, he has inherited. So Yahweh's greatest gift to humankind is his Torah. And as the firstborn with the lion's share of the inheritance, literally the Lion of Judah, Dode inherits the most prized possession. And so he has inherited the Torah, and he is speaking of the Torah, Yahweh's Torah, through Moshe, which is not the Talmud. Do not confuse them as being his. And it was, to a very large extent. Dode wrote prominently and powerfully about the Iowa's Torah. The 19th Mizmor is one of my favorites, where he says, you know, the Torah is complete, and it is perfect, and it is capable of restoring souls. 109th Mizmor is the most vociferous and inspiring ode to how to properly observe the Torah. Dode literally walked out of the pages of the Torah to fulfill its Moed Mikre. So the man who fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Bukkotim is absolutely entitled to call it my Torah. And as I shared with you, when the covenant is reaffirmed, and reaffirmed with not Goyim, but reaffirmed with Yisrael and with Yehudim, Yahweh is going to write his Torah inside of his children so that his Torah becomes our Torah. It's going to guide our actions throughout eternity so that we can exercise free will, but to do so intelligently. Shama, rather than azan, is the customary Hebrew word used throughout the Torah, Wamizmor, and Navi, to encourage us to listen to Yahweh. In most cases, you know, Shama Yisrael is probably the most common citation out of the Torah. You know, listen, Yisrael. Yahweh is God. Your God is one. And by encouraging us to listen, which is very different than the religious corruption of Yahweh's message. Because in religion, you're told to pray without ceasing. If you look at the minions of Haredi Jews, the ones in the black mourning coats, ready for their own funeral, they're banging their heads against the wall. It's a wall that has nothing to do with God anyway. It was built by an anti-Semite king that was appointed by the beast of Rome. And they're banging their head against this wall rather than looking up and realizing the Temple Mount, where Yahweh's home was, the home for Yahweh's name, which they won't even pronounce, is right above them. And they don't have the courage. They don't have the character. They don't have the knowledge or the understanding of how essential it is to the relationship with Yahweh to destroy that Dome of the Rock and the Alaska Mosque that sit on top of it. Why would they leave these trophies to Allah, who is nothing but Satan in the pretense of a god, on top of the Temple Mount? I mean, I can tell you that when I return, and I'm one of the two final witnesses with Yada, this is, or with Elia, this is not an honor. I'm not bragging about this at all, because my role is actually to lay down my life for Yisrael. So unless you want to be bludgeoned to death, you probably ought not be jealous of the fact that I've been asked to do this on behalf of Yisrael. And it is no prize. Let me tell you, this is no prize. All you have to do is read the story of how the Israelites responded to Moshe and the Torah, and you will understand that these are very hard-headed, aggressive, irascible people. They don't like the truth very much. They don't even like Yahweh very much. And they don't like somebody correcting them that says, you know, your religion is revolting. Well, that's the job. And you look at Elia and the job that he did on behalf of Yahweh, where he went against the religious and political establishment of Yisrael. And you know, you could say, okay, it was a debate. No, it wasn't a debate. There was no debate at all. He just grilled them. He embarrassed them. And then when it was all over, it wasn't like Yahweh said, okay, you win the prize, but, you know, we're going to give participation trophies. Everybody contributed. Everybody gets a prize. No, those that Elia embarrassed with his sarcasm were killed. So God's not playing around here. Elia knows. I know. Moshe knows. Dode certainly knows, because even his own son led a rebellion against him. God's not popular. And to speak for him is a great distinction and the joy of my life. You can tell I'm coming into your homes and looking into this camera on live streams, doing this for you because I love it. I'm passionate about it. I want you to know what I know. I want you to enjoy what I know. I want you to cherish your relationship with Yahweh as I do. But to think for a moment that you would be jealous, for example, that I'm, you know, here claiming that I'm one of the two witnesses, you may want to think that through, particularly when you realize that Yada is the Adama Para and is sacrificed in the end of this story. So as we recognize all of this, we need to know that the religious entity that says you ought to pray, that they are absolutely unequivocally wrong, that there is absolutely nothing that Yahweh wants less than you to pray to him. He never once asked anyone to pray to him, ever. And his constant instruction is to either azan, listen and respond, or shema, hear what I have to say. He's really a whole lot smarter than we are. I have put this puzzle together, and I have written 35 books based upon what I have learned about who Yahweh is and what he's offering and who God is not. And so I think I know him maybe better than anyone since doubt. And yet, I can tell you that when you compare what I know and what Yahweh knows, I'm not navel-length by comparison. But that's okay, because that's the way that Yahweh wants to work. He wants to convey his message through those people who are devoted to solving these puzzles and devoted to communicating on his behalf and behalf of his people. So we recognize that the most important thing we can do is to listen to what God has to say, to think about it, and then respond appropriately. As I shared with you, azan was scribed in the hifl stem, which means that the subject of the verb, which the subject is the one speaking to the object, the subject of this verb happens to be Dod. Once the object of the verb, his family, his those listening to him, to be like him. I mean, that is the entire purpose of all of this, is to be like Yahweh and to be like Dod. And it was written with the two moods telling us that this conveys Yahweh's and Dod's will, their desire for us, as well as presenting this under the auspices of free will so that we're encouraged to respond favorably. Now, as is custom, when presenting poetic lyrics of songs, both Yahweh and Dod reinforce their message, saying the same thing but using different words, thereby reinforcing the intent. You'll notice that throughout these programs, it doesn't matter what the topic is. I'll tell you what I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you, and then I tell you what I've told you. And I begin each program by reviewing where we were in the last program. And then when we go through one of the statements that God has inspired, and I will share with you what I can glean from it. And then I'll go back and I'll share with you the commentary that I had written about it, so that we reinforce things, because you can't come to understand until you know, and you can't process things such that what you hear initially goes into what's called short-term memory. But until you've interacted with it, you've thought about it, you've come up with a vivid word picture to express that thought, you've heard it a couple of times, maybe you've written a note on it, you've acted upon it. Until you've done those things, your knowledge is only short-term, doesn't have any longevity, and this is for all eternity. So by repeating it and by painting more visual word pictures about it, then you can transfer what is short-term memory into long-term memory, and now you own the information. That's the first step. The next step is, I want to help you understand it. And when you understand it, oh, then you are empowered to capitalize upon it and to do something even more important, which is to share it, as we're doing on this program. So we find Yahweh doing the same thing that Todo does, the same thing I'm trying to emulate, which is to use different words to reinforce the same intent. So here now we read, please choose to incline and extend your ears. Remember the last verb was azan. This is ozen. Very similar word. And I shared with you on the last program that azan was based upon the Hebrew word for ear. Well, here we have that reinforced. It is your ears. Ozem atam. So the verb is natsa, which is to extend, to incline, to stretch out. Now that's, again, this is symbolic terminology. You're not supposed to, you know, go like this. You don't pull your ear off. You know, I was sharing the other day, and I tried to reinforce here that, you know, if we're going to partake in Passover so that we can receive the benefits of matzah and bakudim and then be part of the Shavuot harvest, it's essential that we view ourselves, at least attitudinally, symbolically, as part of Israel. We can't claim those as goyim independently. They're for Yisrael, and we're invited to participate so long as we view ourselves as becoming one with Yisrael. So many things that God conveys are symbolic. He is not asking you to, you know, stretch out your ear. He's asking you to incline yourself so that you're more focused on hearing what he has to say. You know, when you lean forward, you're more receptive. When you lean back, your body language says, I am less receptive for the message. That's what these mean. So please choose to incline and to extend your ears to the words. And it's even a different word for word here. The normal Hebrew word for word is dabar. This is emir. It's for the declarations and the promises of my mouth, peh, ani, my speech and my voice. Mizmor, this is the conclusion of it. Lyrics, Psalm 78:1. So as we read this, Yahweh's Torah's teaching is comprised of emir, pa, ani, declarations and promises. That is to say, Yahweh conveyed the Torah guidance to Moshe, who wrote it down and memorialized in writing what God had to say for our benefit. In fact, by him doing so, it's actually better for us than had we been there. That surprises most people. You know, they said, wouldn't it, you know, would the children of Israel have every advantage? They were there. They actually got to see and listen to Yahweh. And what we have is through a written document passed on through the generations. We don't have near the access that they did. That's not true at all. In fact, our access to what God said is actually better than theirs for numbers of reasons. One of the reasons were the first thing that they did when Yahweh spoke directly to them is told Yahweh to go away and never want to hear from you again, never want to see you again. So when you have the written text of the Torah, you can access it anytime that you want, literally incorporate it into your life. You can listen to God at any moment and time. But the other advantage is, by it being in a written text, you can do what is even more difficult on this kind of program. Although this is live streaming to X and live streaming to YouTube and live streaming to my Facebook account. And I know that you can, because I do it all the time, you can pause it, think about what was said. You can go back a paragraph or two and listen. You can even bring up closed caption or the transcript of these programs. And so you have lots of ways to reinforce what you're hearing, but it's still different than the written word. And you know, for the last 23 of the 23 and a half years that I have worked with Yod, just really until this last month, I've spent 100% of my time on the written word. Written the 35 books that you see all around me, they're free at yadiyad.com. And that was the technique we used because that's God's favorite way of communicating. He likes to communicate in writing. But we got to the point where one more book on the shelf was not going to make the difference. In fact, the bookshelf was already too intimidating because there were too many books there. People didn't even know where to begin. So Yahweh said, I don't need you to write any more books. What I want you to do is I want you to become the book. And I want you to talk about what's in those books directly to my people. Look them in the eye. Speak directly to them so that they know what you know about me. And that's why we began this, so that the spoken word, particularly when it's reinforced by the written word, where with the written word, you can take everything that I have to say about Yahweh. I came up with an entirely different way of translating and presenting those translations is more accurate. So that, for example, in the end of this, it was to the words, which I then put in a parenthetical, La Emir, because that's the most generic form of these two words, so that online, where the books are free, you can copy each of those two words independently and then put them into your favorite search engine, and you will bring up dictionaries and lexicons that tell you the meaning of them, which gives you the opportunity to verify what I'm sharing with you. And so I wrote La Emir for the declarations and promises, because while Emir is a Hebrew word for word, the places where it is more expansive than Dabar is it speaks of declarations and promises in addition to just the word. And then I wrote of my mouth in bold, and Pe Ani is the Hebrew basis of it in the parenthetical with a long dash that says my speech and my voice, because Pe, which is the mouth, is designed to say, I'm now talking to you and using my voice so that you can hear me. So this is something that is available in the written text. For example, I think somebody's already posted the fact that I'm presenting this message out of one of the 35 books. It's the second of three volumes of An Introduction to God, where I presented this. And while I was sharing a message on Friday night, one of our listeners posted something out of the 78th Mizmor. And immediately I said, you know, this is so pertinent to our time, I should go and do a program on it. So that's how the written word has led to the spoken word to reinforce. And both have value. For years, people have known that if you want to encourage people to do something, you want to motivate them to do something, the spoken word is much more powerful than the written word. If you want people to understand something, which takes far more time, and then to make that understanding part of their life so that they can make decisions about what they have come to understand forever and have it guide them so that they become more capable and are empowered by that knowledge, you want to communicate in the written word, but it takes discipline. It takes discipline that most people don't even have today. And besides that, you have to know where the reservoir of these books reside. But the spoken word, with it, I can encourage you to go read. I'm going to convey enough through these programs, through the spoken word, doing 2 to 3 hours of these a day, that you're going to know what you need to know to capitalize on what God is offering. And because there is something different about these live streams. When I'm writing a book, I have an edit team. I have a fact checker. I can go back, any number of times and augment what I have learned. I can correct something if there's a better way of saying it. Well, I don't have that here. Here, it's raw. You've invited me into your home. We've turned on the lights. The camera is rolling. The mic is picking up everything, and here we are. And so by being able to do this and to do it so enthusiastically and to go in and out of the text of the books that I have written means that I genuinely have to know this. And you can tell from the expression of my face. You can tell from my hands. You can tell from these gestures. You can tell from my eyes, the tone of my voice, the enthusiasm that exudes out of these presentations. I know Yahweh, and I am proud to represent him. and I want to share with you what I have learned about him. I want you to enjoy my Father as I know him. I want you to appreciate my King, my Messiah, Dode, for all he has done for you. I want you to respond so that you answer Yahweh's invitations to meet 7 times a year, and that you know what the 5 conditions and the 5 benefits of the covenant are, so you can capitalize upon them. I want you to know the dates that every Moed Mikre in the past was fulfilled, so that you might appreciate when the last 4 will be enabled, so that you are prepared to capitalize upon them. And there is a passion, there is a flavor, there is a nuance, there is a coloring to the spoken word, which is far more motivating. And in today's world, you are more likely to listen to these presentations than if I handed you a free book. So in many ways, we are now in a privileged position, you and I together, and we're going to take this journey together. We're going to stay the course, and over the next, well, between now and Shavuot, I think it's 16 months, we're going to spend a lot of time together. And as you learn, I want you to share. My producer has reminded me to listen. There is no donate button. I am not motivated by money. I poured the fortune that I earned in business into doing this. I'm investing in you. I want nothing back from you other than your attention. That said, the way that social media works, and I'm a dunderhead at it. I'm not a dunderhead when it comes to God. I know God better than anyone on the planet. But when it comes to social media, I'm not astute. But I'm told that if I ask you to subscribe and have an active account on all of the platforms, whether it's X or it's YouTube, which we have 5 channels, I think, and or Facebook and Rumble, that if you subscribe, it makes what we are doing more available to those we're trying to reach on behalf of Yahweh. So please, if you don't have an account, open one. Please subscribe. Even doing something like clicking that little thumbs up like button, that drives the algorithms that enable us to reach more people. And there's another button over there to share. That does the same thing. There's another one for commenting. Please comment. This is the kind of thing that is necessary across the platforms, X and YouTube, Rumble, and Facebook. We're live streaming across the board. And if you forget, well, I'm using one of the channels, that's how I'm listening to you. Like, for example, in the evening, I'll watch these channels on television while having, popcorn and a glass of wine in the evening as I unwind. And I'll watch them, not because I don't know the material. Obviously, I'm delivering the material. I know the material. But there's something that's helpful when you have a quiet moment and you can watch the delivery. You can say, okay, well, you made this point, but maybe you didn't make it as completely as you need to. Or next time, maybe you could add a little flavor to that so that your listeners have better understanding. And so we know all of these things and want you to we want to encourage you to listen often, subscribe, please share, comment, do it all. You're doing it not just for yourself. You're doing it for others who can benefit. Because one of the things that I learned very early on, God is really big. The universe is really big. He has a lot to offer. Our inheritance does not get smaller because there are more people who capitalize on what God is proposing. It is actually enriched because he has so much to offer that if there's more like-minded, interesting people in forever, then our experiences in forever will be even richer. But there's also this realization that if you help me and work with me, in reaching God's people, and other people become part of God's covenant family because of our collaborative effort. Throughout eternity, as you have the opportunity to spend time one-on-one with Yahweh, you're going to feel so much more satisfied knowing that you made a contribution. Relationships work best when we all contribute, and the covenant is a relationship. So here we have the realization that God likes to reinforce what he has to say, and he's done so, and this next poetic couplet serves to affirm and reinforce the message and meaning of this song. It reads, "I will open my mouth in Mashal Proverbs." This is Mizmor lyric to be sung, Psalm 78:2. Well, I've concluded long ago that even though there is some obscure reference to Solomon having written a whole bunch of Proverbs, I don't think we have many of them. I would think that of the Proverbs that are presented now in the Tanakh, very, very few are written by Solomon. Solomon started off well, but he spun into nothingness very quickly. Some 10 years into his reign, he was way too distracted with all manner of selfish indulgences and with religion, and he lost his way. Dod did not lose his way, and the father, mother, son, the wisdom, celebration of wisdom, the anti-religious tone, the relations celebration of the mashal, the ability to convey ideas by painting pictures with words, which is what mashal means, are so dote, are so symbolic of what he did and what he represents, of his intellect, of his ability to articulate a message, that when Dod says, or Yahweh, doesn't matter here if Yahweh inspired Dod to say it, or Dod is acknowledging this of his father, that I will open my mouth in Mashal Proverbs. Very important to realize that most of them were written by Dod. They're a celebration of comprehension and of intellect. And that this puzzle that we're going to be able to put together is being done to Mashal, to draw pictures with enlightening words, which make what God's saying easier to picture and easier to remember, conveying profound maxims through similes, poems, allegories, metaphors, deploying parallelism to provide the ability to offer counsel and advice. It even means to lead through these things, to guide people, to be responsible for the family by communicating vividly in this way. Mizmor lyrics to be sung, Psalm 78:2. So, both God and his son love to tell stories. I am in love with words. I have loved words since I was a very young man. And to wield words wisely is one of the great callings in life. No one was better at it as a human than Dod. Second unto him would be Moshe. I'm pedaling as fast as I can to try to keep up. But there is a tremendous appreciation of how well Yahweh inspired those who work with him to communicate. And both Yahweh and Dod are exceedingly adept at doing this through prophetic discourse. And in this case, Yahweh's inspiring his chosen shepherd and king, HaMashiach Dod, the son, who listens to the father throughout the Mashal Proverbs and then conveys what he has learned. The Mashal is somewhat like Moshe and Devarim, which is called Deuteronomy by because of the, well, it's just a double corruption. Dut means two. The onomy would be a variation of a Greek word conveying the concept of law. And so it's sort of, it's conveys second law when there is no one law. So Devarim, the correct title, means words. And the words of the Torah are comprised of teaching and guidance. So what Devarim is Moshe reiterating and repeating what Yahweh had told him, but in his own words to make it applicable to his people's lives. And while Dod wrote the Mizmor that we are considering, this happens to be a Mizmor, the 78th, to reflect upon the way that they apply to our lives, Dod also wrote the Mashal. Personally, I like the intellect that is conveyed and the prophecy and the learning and all the attributes of the Mizmor. And I find the Mashal to be a little more simplistic. But there, you know, one reinforces the other. It's just like Devarim. Moshe is actually trying to dumb it down a little bit so that the wayward children of Yisrael can process what God has said. So, you know, for example, as he repeats the 10 statements that Yah etched in stone, he ad-libs a bit to provide additional shading and information to enhance understanding. And I think to some degree, these Mashal word pictures from Dod are similar. As such, we can conclude first that the Mashal are the inspired word of God, most of them written by Dod. That the poetry of the Mashal and the lyrics of the Mizmor convey the same message, it's just not at the same intellectual standing. So, for example, here in this Mizmor, Dod is saying that the goal is for you to comprehend, for you to deduce the meaning of what I am conveying to you. And as we find out, I want you to be able to resolve these word pictures that I'm painting. I put the pieces together. It's a very intellectual stimulation. When he speaks of Chokhmah, for example, and the eighth Mizmor, the eighth Mashal, Dod just goes full poetic on what you'd call wisdom, on the ability to process information and deduce reasonable connections. But rather than going through and talking about the process and how that happens and how then you apply that process. I mean, he's just, okay, chokma this, chokma that, chokma by the door, chokma by the heaven, chokma here, chokma there, everywhere there's a chokma. And okay, you know, we get it. He was a brilliant man and he celebrated the value of intellect. But it's not as insightful, as cerebral as this particular Mizmor. And that's pretty much the case all the way through. Number three, that just as he was inspired, Dod, to compose this particular psalm and all of the psalms that bear his name, Dod is the son whose hand scribed the Proverbs. They're most of them are set in a family setting so that we understand the covenant in very simple terms. And we have been studying. I devote about a third of the volumes, the five volumes and observations, to just the Mashal. After a while, I moved from the Mashal back into the prophets because they, again, you're talking about, I'm going to paint these word pictures for you, very simple concepts that's easy for you to understand versus, boy, you delve into Dode's Mizmor or Yashaya's prophetic declarations, and the level of intellect being conveyed is, you know, 100 or 1,000 times greater. Everything, however, points to draw pictures of Yahweh's Bereth, of his family relationship that he wants to establish with us, that comes and takes shape, is framed, if you will, in his Torah. Now, while there were probably some 40 men and women who are acknowledged as prophets, approximately 20 of them have a written legacy associated with them where they're actually delivering prophecy. 10 of them, fairly serious, with books named after them, bearing their names. There were 3 that were particularly adept at painting God's portrait with their words. The most adept 3 would be the first of the Zeroah, Moshe. The second would be the greatest of the Zeroah, Dode. And the third would be the prophet who wrote the textbook on how to be a Zeroah, how to act in the, he prefers the term Choder, although he uses the term Zeroah. when he uses the term Zeroah, you better pay attention because it's serious. But, well, everything is serious with Yashaya. But it's Yashaya that paints the portrait of all time, of all prophetic revelations as they relate to the children of Yisrael, their worst all the way to their best. And so these are the great 3 orators. And Moshe's vocabulary is quite well developed. Dode's vocabulary is a notch above. Yashaya's vocabulary, I mean, you really got to be in your game. If you're translating the Torah, it goes pretty quickly with Moshe. Same terms used over and over again. Pretty straightforward concepts being delivered. With Dode, his intellect is revealed through every word. You do have to pay very, very close attention if you're going to follow along with the message he's actually trying to convey to you. But Yashaya is on a league by him, himself. You know, for one statement from Yashaya, I could translate 3 from Dode and 10 from Moshe, just to put it in perspective. Well, they are the most, in my way of thinking, the most brilliant and articulate of those who spoke for God. And you know, I'm going to be honest with you. God chose me because I'm not a dummy. I've got a surprisingly fast processor. And this particular task, which is putting together the pieces of the puzzle so that you can see the entire picture, framing it correctly, and explaining how those pieces go together, I'm pretty adept at that. It's one of the reasons I think I was chosen for this message. We all have our strengths and weaknesses, and this happens to play into my wheelhouse. I am the ultimate dot-to-dot. That's a child's game, of course, and a very simple concept to convey. But you know how the dot-to-dot puzzles, where you go 1 through 50 or something, if you go in the order of the numerical order and hold your pencil down at the end, rather than a sea of unrelated dots, all of a sudden you have an image that you can see and appreciate. Well, that is the process that we're using here. So I'm sharing this with you because in Yashaya 25 through 30, the prophet speaks of a time when a new song will be sung. And it will be sung in the land of Yehuda. There is a time when there will be considerable sour notes while also the sweet music of father and son to follow. This is one of the things that makes both, I shouldn't say both, I'd say all 3 men and and to a large degree, my witness to them, consistent in that the Torah is filled with do not do this, instead understand this. Religion bad, relationship good. About as much information on religion bad as there is on relationship good. Most people don't recognize that, but that is the essence of the Torah. And then as you move into Dode's presentations through the Mizmor, people get all frustrated with him because he said, God, why is he in such a bad mood? He hates everything. He's against everything. You know? Same exact ratio. Those who oppose God, bad. Religion, bad. Relationship, good. The same mix in Dode's Mizmor. Do this and it's going to turn out badly for you. This is the consequence. Come to understand this and rely and capitalize upon what I'm sharing with you is appropriate, and you're going to receive the benefits. Then you move into Yeshayah. The first, 10 chapters of Yeshayah, I hate religion. God, over and over again, you're in the mess you're in because you have been religious. Stop being religious if we're ever going to have the hope of a relationship. Over and over, he reinforces it. Then he introduces his choder, whose job it is to explain this to you in the last days so that there's a remnant of Yisrael who listen and respond and who disassociate themselves from religion and politics so that they can see and hear and understand the portrait that God is painting for them. And now you're hearing it. And if you look at how Yahweh has asked me to respond to him, we began by exposing and condemning the religion that has been the deadliest to his people, the religion that exists to annihilate them, Islam. I've written the 5 books of Goddamn Religion, the most comprehensive analysis and condemnation of the Quran and Hadith ever composed. And I'm the only person who has done that. I'm the only person who has actually put the Quran in chronological order and put it into the context of Muhammad's life so it could be understood using the Hadith. I'm the only person in the world that has done that. But also, I have done something that no one has done, which is not only did I disprove Islam by comparing Allah's citations where he says, I am the inspiration of the Torah, and this my Quran confirms the Torah when it's the antithesis of it, and I proved that. I also did the same thing for the Christian New Testament. I demonstrated conclusively, irrefutably, that the fact of the matter is that the Christian New Testament, rather than confirming the Torah, rather than being predicted in the Torah, refutes it. It is their butting heads. They are complete opposites. And if that were not enough, I've written a series of books, particularly the Babel series, where I prove that Rabbinic Judaism is wrong. In fact, throughout these series, I expose the reasons that Rabbinic Judaism is a complete fraud and that the rabbis make even no pretense of speaking for Yahweh. They acknowledge full out that they speak for themselves. The only thing that they did that creates an illusion that they speak for a G-D and a Hashem is that they call their rubbish, which is the Talmud, they call it a Torah. Otherwise, they would have nothing to fool anybody with. And so my job is the same that as Moshe's job, which is the same as Dode's job, which is the same as Yashaya's job, because it is Yahweh's job to expose and condemn religion and politics so that that rubbish might be cleared away sufficiently for God's people to see the truth for the first time. So there would be considerable sour notes. The text reads, and so, excuse me, you will say on that day, look now and see Yahweh. And so you will say on that day, look now and see Yahweh. This is our God. We have waited expectantly for him, and he has saved us. This is Yahweh whom we have anticipated. We are rejoicing and glad in his liberation and deliverance. Yeshaya, Isaiah 25, 9. That has not happened. When Yeshaya wrote this, he wrote it somewhere between 700 and 750-ish, 740-ish BCE, 300 years after Dodd, 700 years before Dodd would fulfill Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, 2,700 years before Yisrael would see God again. The last time Yisrael had seen God was 14, some in the range of 1480-ish, or excuse me, 1450-ish, 1447, 1448 BCE. So this was written about seven centuries after the Israelites had last seen God in their presence, and some 2,700 years before they would see him again. God's returning. There is a day certain. It says Yom Kippurim, which is going to occur in year 6,000 Yah on October 2nd, 6:22 p.m. as the sun sets in Jerusalem on October 2nd, 2033. For those who survive up to this point and who have been prepared by the sacrifice of the Adam of Parah, there will be a celebration of Yahweh's appearance. You will know him by name. You will have accepted what he has done for you. You will be in love with and respect and honor his beloved son, Dodd. And this is the day where you can say, look now and see Yahweh. Now, there will be no Christians there. There will be no Muslims there. There will be no practitioners of Judaism there. I can say this emphatically because it says, they will say on that day, they will say on that day, they will say on that day, look now and see Yahweh. You would never have a rabbi or a practitioner of Judaism say, look now and see Yahweh. G-D, maybe. Hashem, perhaps. The Lord Adonai? Yeah, possibility. That's not what they're saying. And they would never say Yahweh's name. They go all apoplectic when you say Yahweh's name. They'll do everything and say, that's no, you can't say that. That's not a name. That's archaic. Yeah, it is. They hate it in their religion. They've written Yahweh's name out of their lives. There is zero chance that you will see a single practitioner of Judaism there. Not one. There is no chance you will see someone who believes in Christianity. Their God is Jesus. And Jesus never existed. As I shared in the last show, Jesus is as real as Satan Claus and the Ishtar Bunny, better known as Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. Literally, he is no more real than the fakes that were derived based upon the religion, based upon the crude counterfeit of Dodd. The Messiah is Dodd. Son of God is Dodd. The Passover lamb is Dodd. It's irrefutable. So look now and see Yahweh. This is our God, not Allah, not Jesus, not Hashem. This is our God. Now, the remnant who's going to be saying that at this point is the mortal remnant of Yisrael, who were left behind during the last harvest, which will be of olives and therefore of Yisraelites on Teruah, and who then have taken advantage of the cleansing waters and the searing flames and the ashes of, well, my sacrifice is the Adam of Parah. I lay down my life to save the remnant of Yisrael. Now, it's not as all dramatic as that sounds. It is and it isn't. I mean, it is in the sense that there's only two men in human history that Yahweh has incorporated their personal sacrifice into his Moed Mikre, Dodd on Pesach and Matzah. Pesach, where he sacrificed his Bashar body, and then on Matzah, he allowed his soul to carry our guilt and to take it into Sheol, making him the most magnificently special man in human history for what he did for us. And then while conducting and serving as the Ruach, cultivating the Shavua and the Teruah harvest on the Shabbat of Teruah, September 24th in 2033, year 6000, I'm going to serve as the Adam HaParah, this bloody red man of the earth who has been productive and will be fruitful on behalf of God's people. It's been corrupted to red heifer. So I'm one of two men who is being asked to lay down their life for the wellness of God's people. And therefore, I can speak with some degree of commitment to this text. This will transpire 10 days after that offering. It is on Teruah. Teruah is the first day of the seventh month. On the 10th day of the seventh month is Yom Kippurim. It's not the Day of Atonement. It's a day of reconciliations. When the relationship with Yisrael and Yahweh is reconciled, all of the attendees that day who have benefited from the cleansing and purging, from the spectacle that Elia serves as the master of ceremony over, and it's a reenactment of what happened two millennia, 888 years earlier, when Elia went against the religious and political establishment, and Yahweh worked with him in terms of the waters and the great igniting of the flame, and then the elimination of all those who advanced political and religious agendas. The same thing will be true, but this audience, just as in that day, all of Yisrael was gathered for this showdown. The same thing will be true in Jerusalem. If you're not part of Yisrael, you will not be there. And if you are there, you will be perceived as being against Israel. The only exception to that is that those who were harvested or through the processes of Shavua or Teruah will return and witness this from above. And so this is your last call. This is Yisrael making this declaration as an affirmation of Jeremiah 31, which is the reconciliation of the covenant relationship with Yehudim and Yisrael. And so it says, we have waited expectantly for him, and he has saved us. What that means, since this is the mortal remnant of Yisrael who was left behind and has now been purged and cleansed by what Yahweh is doing through the sacrifice of the red heifer and the words that Elia is delivering as the master of ceremonies. This means that that they've had some time to process this. They know exactly the day that Yahweh is returning. They know that Father and Son has managed to save them, not only from their foes, but from themselves, making this an incredibly poignant declaration. This is Yahweh whom we have anticipated. There isn't any participant in the Jewish religion, Judaism, that is anticipating Yahweh. There is not one of them that will say Yahweh has saved us. It's a works-based religion. They do things to earn their salvation, or mostly they don't do things they don't even have salvation in Judaism. You attain a sense of righteousness, I guess, but there's no heaven and hell in Judaism. And so there is no concept of Yahweh saving them. And so this is those who have walked away from religion, disassociated themselves. So we are, this is Yahweh whom we have anticipated. We are rejoicing and glad in his liberation and deliverance. This scene is actually painted, and I think is the 12th chapter of Zechariah, which means remember Yah. And it actually means remember the man of Yah, if we were to fully amplify Zachar. And what they're doing is they're recognizing that Yahweh says that a spirit of reconciliation will come down upon Jerusalem, which is this the whole presentation, the whole derivation and consequence of the result of the sacrifice of the Adama Para and orchestration of these events by Elia working in cooperation with Yahweh on behalf of his people. And so they will have anticipated this. They'll be rejoicing in the liberation. And then we hear from Yahweh saying that the people are going to lament, really, tears of joy, and yes, and also heartache, as Yahweh returns with the one that they pierced. And what he's saying is that, particularly because he goes on to say, as one would weep for a firstborn son. The realization that Dod made this tremendous sacrifice, fulfilling Pesach and Matzah, enduring all of the agony associated with that, and then spitting in his face and denying him and foisting not one but two false messiahs on the gullible of their people and upon the world, and never once acknowledging what Dod had done at such great cost, and then seeing him come back and celebrating the benefit of it I'm going to be looking down from above because my soul will be released from my Bashar body at the conclusion of the sacrifice. And I'm going to probably be very close to Dod as he returns. And I'm going to be bawling like a baby. And I'm not an emotional guy. But I can imagine God's people who have recognized how long they've been wrong. So this goes on to say, during this day, they will sing this song. In the land of Yehuda, our city has been empowered and is strong, becoming a place of salvation, protected and fortified. Yeshaya 26:1. This is the day. The day is the Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliations. I want to put it on your pagan calendar. It is the 2nd of October, 2033, 6:22 p.m. as the sun sets in Jerusalem. And it will transpire all the way through the end of the next day. And during this day, they will sing this song. This very song. In the land of Yehuda, not in the Vatican, not in Washington, D.C., not in London, for God's sake, not in Mecca. They're in Yehuda. You know what Yehuda means? It's a combination of Yahweh's name and Dod's name. Dod means beloved. It is the beloved of Yah. In the land of Yehuda, our city is empowered and strong. The city of Dod, what is the city of Dod? Sure, you know the name of the city of Dod. It is Jerusalem. Yaru is from Yara. Yara is the actionable verb that defines Torah. Yara is the source from which direction, guidance, instruction, and teaching flows. Jerusalem is from Shalom. Shalom speaks of reconciliation, having peace in the relationship so that the relationship is restored. That's where they're coming back. See how important it is to get the names right? And the value of getting the names right, like Torah, like the city of Dod, like Yehud, like Jerusalem. There's a treasure in every one of these words. And it is that treasure that we're sharing with you. It then goes to say that this city becomes a place of salvation, which is salvation. It's written here as Yahuwah, and Yeshua would be Yahweh saves. It's the inverse order of Yeshaya. So Yeshaya and Yeshuah would be very, very similar concepts. It's based on the verb Yasha. The primary meaning of Yasha actually isn't to save. That's its tertiary definition. Its primary meaning is to deliver. Liberate, remove from harm's way, which is to save people either from themselves or from some threat. So Jerusalem is going to be the place where the promise of reconciliation is delivered, where the enemies of Israel will be singed and will be washed away in this great enactment of the sacrifice of the Adam of Parah. And with Yahweh being there, but even more so with his son, who was the ultimate defender of Israel, who fought 66 defensive battles to protect God's people, he's returning. There will never be another threat to God's people or his city, his family. So now you can open your gates and doors, Israel, for something that, well, it's difficult for me to talk about because I was much more comfortable being anonymous. I loved being the bookworm. I loved being given this job by Yahweh of investigating what he had to say. As we said, putting the pieces together so that after you come to know exactly what he communicated, you would understand it and that we could all benefit from it. And I did so as Yada, as an anonymous author, and posted all the books free online. I even did my first radio shows under Yada. The only thing I did under my own name was Prophet of Doom, and I just figured there's a whole lot, and Yahweh did too, there's a whole lot more credibility if I'm willing to put my own name, Craig Wynn, on the line, on the cover, do the radio interviews under my name. You know for certain I'm not afraid of them. I got Yahweh protecting me. And so I did those things under my own name. You'll see it all under my own name. But I otherwise wanted to be anonymous. That wasn't what Yahweh wanted. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of prophecies like the one I'm just going to share with you next, where he says that his witness, his voice, his herald, his observant foreigner, his final Zeruah, his Zacharon, this memorable man, the man from Edom, the Adam of Parah, all of these titles and names that Yahweh has ascribed to his choder, the stem from the fallen root of Israel, this Nakri, speaking of God's observant foreigner, all of it. Because Israel had completely forgotten Yahweh. They'd written him out of their lives. They had disowned everything that Dod represents as the Son of God, as the Messiah, as the returning King of Kings, as the Lamb who fulfilled Pesach, the soul who perfected us through Matzah. They didn't know any of it. And for Yahweh to come back and celebrate a family reunion with these people who are saying, we anticipated Yah's return. The only reason they can anticipate Yahweh's return, because they had forgotten about him for 3,000 years, is because Yahweh picked a man to remind them. And that is why we're doing these programs. That's why I've asked for you to invite me into your home that I could share this truth with you. And so I'm going to finish this statement. And I'm going to read to you what it says, with you knowing I did not choose this. I did not seek this. But Yahweh needs it. And Yahweh never works alone. He needs his people to return to him. He needs to reintroduce his name to his people. He needs to reacquaint his people with his son who served to save them. He needs to do all of this on behalf of Israel, such that they know the timeline, they know the day that he is returning, that they know the conditions of the covenant, they know the purpose and intent of each of the Moed Mikre, that they know all of these things so they can say, we anticipated this. This is Yahweh, our God. And without what is said next, it would not have happened. We go 3,000 years of nothing, without a single Yehud knowing Yahweh, speaking for him, listening to him, awakening his people. And God isn't about to change his approach. He told Moshe, after he was rejected by Israel, after they said, "We don't ever want to hear your voice again. We don't ever want to see you again." Yahweh said, "I understand. I'm good with that." So from that point on, he only spoke to his people through a person of his choosing. So he's telling Israel, whether you live in Israel, whether you're Yahud or a Israelite, whether you live in America or in the Promised Land, whether you're in Europe or South America, it's time you open the gates and the doors of your home. For those listening to this message, you have done so. Thank you. So that the correct and righteous goy, who has been observant, Shamar, and who is trustworthy, Emun, may enter. You've been lied to so long by politics, by religion, by the religions that have hated you, Christianity and Islam, by the religion that has taken advantage of you, Judaism, that you've forgotten your God. You've written him out of your life. You don't know your Messiah. And so this is your last chance. Tear down the barriers. Open your doors. Let the goy, whom Yahweh has chosen, who Yahweh has equipped and enabled and empowered, come into your home. Reveal the truth. Come to know Yahweh. Come to know the Messiah. Come to understand the covenant. Come to appreciate the timing and the purpose of each of the Moed Mikre. Capitalize on what God is offering. Allow the goy who is right, who has been observant, Shamar, who has closely examined and carefully considered, who Yah affirms that his message is trustworthy and reliable, indeed verifiable, so that he may enter, so that I have the opportunity to speak with you, so that you might capitalize and join us in the covenant, share eternity with us, enrich the family. This has been the second episode of Solving Puzzles, brought to you by Yada, whose name is Craig Wynn, on behalf of our God, Yahweh, and what has become the Yahweh blog.